Hey, good morning. Welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Before we get things cooking here, a reminder that you're always invited to be a part of the program via phone and email. And you can also follow us on Twitter. That's at WFSU Perspective. That is perspective like a singular going on. Hey, we got a quorum call going on here, and we have a quorum, and we are ready to gavel our pre-session session into operation here. Because the old saying around Tallahassee, remember that one? Secure your family and lock up the farm animals because the Florida legislature's back in town.
Well, we're always in town.
You guys are.
We're always in town.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Well, next Tuesday, of course, March 5th, the state's lawmakers officially begin the 2013 legislative session. Even though these folks have been meeting in various committees for several months, like right after the election, it seems though committee week started gearing up and the representatives and senators were coming to town and they're batting around bills and getting everything laid out pre-session. We'll talk about that too. Now, for the first time, really in 5 years, I think it is, dealing with a multi-billion dollar state budget shortfall is really not going to be a prime consideration for this meeting of the Florida legislature. Revenues have gotten up to the point where right now we're maybe not where we need to be, but it's certainly not as bad as it was in the previous years when
hope is in the air.
Hope is in the air, absolutely. We've got to be optimistic about this whole thing. But, you know, there are lots of other important matters up for discussion this year. So to give us a from-the-inside preview of the session, we're really happy to welcome two members of the Capital Region's legislative delegation. By the way, we did reach out to State Senator Bill Monford, as well as Representatives Halsey Bashirs and Marty Coley. But the week before session, hey, this is the last chance these folks have to do much of anything before they get locked in for 60 days of just unrelenting activity. And if you've never lived through a legislative session, you have no clue how intense things get there at the Capitol. So let's start off here. Let's see, on my right, your left, or vice versa. Representing Florida House District 9, Michelle Raywinkle Vasalinda, elected to the Florida House for the first time in 2008, now in her third term, lawyer, college professor, cyclist, hiker, and movie buff. And good to have
Indeed.
You in, Representative.
It's very good to be here. Some of those things I don't do much of anymore because I'm so busy, but other than that, but it's very good to be here. Good morning.
It's great to have you on, too. Thank you. And right next door, Alan Williams, representative of Florida House District 8, also first elected in 2008, reelected twice since. He's the current Democratic whip in the House and has extensive background in local government. He is a dangerous man when you get him onto the basketball court and pretty decent golfer, too. So, Representative, good to have you on, too.
It's great to be here. And, yeah, I'm not as dangerous anymore now that I had a knee surgery thanks to Dr. Gary Roll. But at least I can walk through the Capitol this year without a cane.
I know you were hurting pretty bad there for a while.
Yeah, no, it was a tough session last year. But we're on demand and we're ready to take on this year's session and take on hopefully a good budget that will bring pay raises for state workers, which is desperately needed in this community.
Yeah, we got to talk about that and also perspective changes to the to FRS, the Florida Retirement System.
Yep.
We have health matters to take up, all kinds of stuff on that. Before we kick off, though, maybe a little bit of reaction to the news of the day here. This sequester, of course, is just, you know, dominating the headlines nationally. Well, what does that mean for Florida? Representative Raywinkle Vasalinda, what's the deal?
I think it means some pretty serious consequences if it goes forward. But, I have some faith that we'll get to the edge of the cliff and we'll pull back. But I will tell you that some of the things that we do in state government has effect with the sequester. For instance, collecting the internet sales tax actually could be an answer for part of the federal budget woes. And there are 49 other states that are not collecting internet sales tax. We have been below $1 to $4 billion of our estimated tax collection because what we're losing from internet sales tax. The other 49 states are also losing revenue because they're not collecting internet sales tax and have been for over a decade. Those sorts of revenue shortfalls really add up year after year after year, and the federal government has been, I think, pitching in to help. And some of these things have not been really recognized, but it is what's been happening. And so some of the folks have been that are for the internet, collecting the internet sales tax, which is not a new tax that needs to be collected, modernizing our tax collection system, have been up and in Congress lobbying and saying, let the states do their work, collect the sales tax that we're owed, and then we'll be less of a burden on the federal government. And it is part of the answer to the federal government, to federal budget woes.
And Representative Williams, what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's a very frustrating time. Whether you're a Floridian or whether you look at this from an American perspective, to see our Congress and our White House play against each other on this. And, you know, I commend the president for taking the leadership to say, look, you know, send me a bill. Let's get beyond this. We got much bigger things to address. From a state perspective, Florida, you know, we have probably more military installations than any state in the union. So it's going to have an impact on our military installations. It's going to have an impact on jobs here in our state, especially it's at a tough time when we're trying to recover and rebound from the greatest recession. And, you know, I know Floridians are fed up with what's going on in Washington, and we're hopeful that we don't follow their suit. Hopefully we don't follow their lead this session. With a lot of the back and forth rhetoric that you hear up in Washington, but I will tell you that, you know, it's going to have a number of impacts. Whether it's the military, whether it's health care, you have a lot of money that flows from the federal government down to the state for health care for our seniors and our needy. So it's going to have a real impact. And then also you look at just the jobs impact. We're trying to turn this economy around, and right now is not a time to be playing budget chicken in Washington.
Okay. One thing is, since you mentioned health care, Representative Williams, we'll bring that up too. Governor Scott, who had been an adamant opponent of any kind of reform on the part of health care on the federal level, but then, of course, the Supreme Court did what it did, and it's law of the land and all that, part and parcel of the Medicaid expansion. And talking to a local hospital CEO the other day, I said, what were you thinking about? It was Mark O'Brien, okay, over at Tallahassee Memorial. So what did you think of then Governor Scott coming out and going along with the Medicaid expansion? He said he had to. He didn't have a choice because Florida had been looking for a universal waiver to put Medicaid patients into managed care, has been trying to push that for years. And Secretary Sebelius said, sure, we'll go along with that if you do the Medicaid expansion in Florida. And he did. Is that what you heard, Representative Ray?
Well, you know, I think that we've all come to the realization that something's got to be done with our health care needs. And I think the president got there first and was able to pass a bill. And then the states, some of us were pretty recalcitrant in moving along in that regard. And I think, you know, this is the law of the land. It's reality. And I think, you know, the governors had to come meet that. I'm sure he could have done some more, sticking his heels in the sand. But I think, you know, now's the time. The Supreme Court has spoken, and now's the time to come along and do these things. And okay. Sometimes politics are reality. The president got elected. Sebelius is his secretary in his administration. And, you know, there you have it. There's the mandate, and mm-hmm. He has to come meet it.
Okay. But Representative Williams, you're also hearing some pushback now from Attorney General Bondi. You've got, Atwater, Putnam. The cabinet's coming out saying, no. And some leadership there in the House as well as the Senate saying it's got to get by us, and it probably won't. What are you hearing?
Well, you know, obviously before the governor was for Obamacare, he was against it. So we know now that, you know, he has now seen, I think, the reality that we have to move forward. You know, as Mark O'Brien and other hospital administrators and other folks in the healthcare community said, look, either you can keep fighting this and folks can continue to die because there are folks that will benefit from this. Folks who are unhealthy, folks who need the help, who need the coverage, who need to get into a hospital. This will save lives. One life is worth it, let alone the thousands of lives the state will be able to save, let alone the thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives around the country. And so, you know, now that Governor Scott is supportive of this, I think what you'll see is the legislature, both the House and the Senate, they will look at this and say, look, how can we as lawmakers not take these fundings, these dollars from Washington and help expand Medicaid in our state? We know that there's a great need. We know that it doesn't go all the way, as many folks want it to go, but we know that it's fully funded for the first 3 years. And we know that it doesn't cost $26 billion over 10 years. It's more like $3 billion. And so the state's share of it will not be as great as many folks have estimated or as the governor first put out back in December. And we're going to get help from the federal government. This program will help save lives at the end of the day, and that's what we should be trying to do. When we have more folks living longer, guess what? They're paying more money. They're putting money back into the economy. So it's a return on investment. And so I'm glad to see the governor now coming around to support this.
Okay. We'll speak for the Senate, but what do you think the chances are in the House?
Well, you know, in the House, I'm going to a meeting this afternoon that they're going to have. Chair Corcoran is chairing the PPACA Select Committee. I'll be there this afternoon to listen in to see what the next steps are. But is it an easy path? It should be. But obviously, there are a lot of different issues there. There are a lot of issues on, you know, how much it will cost. What's the impact to GR? Where is the money coming from? Budgets are priorities. And when we pass this budget in April or whether it be in May, the final budget, hopefully it reflects the priorities of the state of Florida, not just our Republican friends or not just our Democratic friends, but Floridians for the state of Florida.
That's a novel concept where you have both sides working together to do something. And as I recall, we used to see that. I can remember wandering downtown, and I think you folks recall, too, where you would have people, oh, like, say, Ron Silver, who was, you know, a Democrat from South Florida and an adamant Democrat, a liberal, as he'd probably be called today. And you'd have Jim King from Jacksonville, Republican, hardcore Republican. He used to be known as a conservative. I don't know if he would be anymore, you know, the late Jim King. And they'd harangue each other at the Capitol all day, then go over to Clyde's and Costello's and buy each other beers all night. It was, you know, the strangest thing to see. The local delegation on perspectives as we head into the 2013 legislative session. Michelle Ray Winkle-Vasalinda and Alan Williams here with us. And your calls, 2414-1234, perspectives at WFSU.org. We'll be right back. And this meeting of the local delegation committee will come to order here on Perspectives. Representative Michelle Ray Winkle-Vasalinda from Florida House District 9. And from District 8, we have the Honorable State Representative Alan Williams here with you and your calls as well. And George has given us a line here, probably about a state worker issue. I can't imagine such a thing. Thanks for hanging on, George. Welcome.
Well, good morning, Tom. It's always good to talk to you and my good, my very dear friend, Michelle Ray Winkle-Vasalinda. And she's more than a representative. She's a very dear friend of mine.
Hello,
and
George.
Mr. Williams. And I'd just like to say I'm very concerned about what's going on with this sequester and the effort by the Republican Party to basically decimate the FRS system to what we know. I mean, it's bad enough that they almost blew it up a couple of years ago when they tried to get rid of the drop. They cut the interest that one gets on his pension. Of course, I was affected by that because I didn't get in until September 1st of 2011, and that 3% went into effect on July 1st, so I couldn't get in with the 6.5%. But, you know, the thing that concerns me is that I think we need to, like our president, who has really tried to encourage people and has really tried to help people, has tried to say, look, we need not only tax increases because we have to get more revenue, and, you know, while at the same time cutting some things, but I think a lot of what's happening is an attempt to do harm to this president, and I believe that the man has genuinely shown his concern for people, and I hope that we can keep the FRS system, because if we get rid of it, you're not going to get quality employees that are going to want to stay around in the state of Florida for 30 years.
Well, I think you've got a great point, George, and I think elections do matter, and the fact that the president got reelected. But I think even on the state level, the fact that our Republican colleagues put in 10 amendments on the ballot this past November, seven of them failed. And all 10 of them were put in by Republicans. As I say, seven of them were very ideological. The voters read them and rejected seven, accepted three. The three that they that voters accepted were the most palatable to all. And so I think there's a real lesson there that the voters are listening, they're reading, they're paying attention, and we better, all of us, Republicans and Democrats, better pay attention to the common sense solutions that we have to our economy, national security, environmental concerns, education concerns, and so on. Because if we don't, the voters are going to turn folks out, and I turn not only folks but amendments and turn away ideological answers. And so the FRS, and just to focus there, I think is an ideological answer to a problem that does not exist. Florida's retirement system is the standard, the gold standard in the country by far. And to now try to tinker with it, it's certainly, you know, breaking something that doesn't need to be fixed. And I think it's being done for ideological reasons. And it may even be done for feeding a particular industry sector so that more financial planners, frankly, can get some more business. I haven't said that publicly, but that is part of now what I'm going to start to say, take the gloves off a little bit. And I think that what I've been talking to the speaker about and I've been talking to my colleagues about is we don't need a sledgehammer with the FRS. We need a scalpel. Some of the municipal retirement pieces that feed into the FRS do need some work. They have gotten overheated. Not our cities. Our cities has been well managed. But and thank you to the city folks and that have done that. But we do need common sense solutions. The voters need to cry out for that and did in this past election. And I think that that should be a cautionary tale for my Republican colleagues who want to do ideological work instead of common sense work for the citizens of the state of Florida.
Okay, Representative Williams, your take on FRS, and maybe also we can get a little bit into some of the other proposals, which is to up the employee share when it comes to things like health care for state workers and also possibly, you know, some other tweaks to the current contract that state workers have with the state of Florida.
You know, Tom, we've been down this road before. We can't continue to balance the budget on the backs of state employees. You know, there's a story, a young man who went to school here in Tallahassee, worked hard. You know, his mother was a lifelong state employee, you know, in a lot of cases lived paycheck to paycheck, sometimes wondered you know, whether the lights were going to be paid or whether the medicine was going to be paid. Ended up going to finishing school, going to college, got married and did well. And that story, that's my story. I know it all too well. I know that many state employees out there, they come to me all the time saying, you know, what next? you know, what is the state going to do to us next? And we have to find a different way to show our appreciation for our state employees. You know, this session we're going to fight like hell to make sure they get a state to get a raise. It's critical. But, you know, we've led this fight before. We've led the fight before when they, you know, when they put this 3% in and they took that out and put it into their pension because they said that the FRS wasn't sound. Well, we know FRS is sound. It's one of the best pension systems in the world, not the country, in the world. You know, does it have its challenges? Sure it does. Is this the best way to solve it? I don't think so. So, you know, I've sat down with the speaker. We're going to continue to sit down with the speaker. I know this is very important to him. But we're going to sit down, like sort of like what you said, you know, with Jim King and Senator Silver. Let's figure out how can we work. How can we get to a point that we can meet to the need of solvency, but also show our state employees that we value what they do and we value them on the back end when they're retiring. And so we got to make sure we have a plan that will attract the best and brightest. Right now, the plan that we have is one of the greatest benefits of drawing folks into state government work. They're not doing it because of the pay. They're doing it because of they know on the back end in their silver years, they will have a nest egg to take care of them.
State Representative Alan Williams and his colleague in the Florida House, Michelle Ray Winkle-Vasalinda, our guest on Perspectives as we do our pre-session session here today. Let's go to line two. Reed's hanging out there. Hi, Reed.
Hey, Tom. How are you this morning?
Hey, we're hanging in. How'd the gig go at the Mockingbird for you?
Oh, we had a great, great time. Thanks. Just want to, first of all, start off by thanking Representative Williams and Representative Ray Winkle-Vasalinda for the good work they do for our area.
Thank you.
In a very adversarial role. I heard this morning, Tom, and maybe I missed this, but I'm shocked, and I would like to get the representative's take on this. On the anniversary of the death of Trayvon Martin, a bill has been proposed in the legislature to expand Stand Your Ground and expand immunity for people who use their firearms to chase down people who they deem a threat to someone else.
Nope.
I'm scared.
Let's see. I think the term is you feel threatened, perhaps, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is just the type of legislature that's been known to pass silly stuff like this.
No, let's see. Just an aside before we get a response from our two guests, Village Square is going to have a discussion of that tonight coming up about 6 o'clock, I think, at St. John's Episcopal Church Hall here in Tallahassee. That should be pretty good. Marion Hammer was supposed to be there. We understand that she had a conflict in scheduling and she won't be there, but it should be a really good discussion. Michelle Ray Winkle-Vasalinda, what's the deal with the bill, at least in the House side?
You know, I have not read the bill. I've heard that it is well, you know, I probably oughtn't speak about it if I haven't completely read it, but I don't know. I'll pass off to Alan.
Okay.
Well, I will tell you this. We filed a bill to do just the opposite. We filed a bill to repeal Stand Your Ground. We know that history is now our teacher. It's shown us that although we've had some very high-profile cases like Trayvon Martin, who would have turned 18 on February 5th, I believe. We just celebrated, or not celebrated, we commemorated the 1 year since he was murdered in the streets of Sanford a few days ago at Florida A&M University. And I pause because, you know, I think about, you know, I have a son. And, you know, it was very tough a year ago. It's still tough a year later. But we filed a bill to repeal Stand Your Ground because, you know, right now in our streets and our neighborhoods, folks should feel safe. Folks should feel safe when they're walking. And the repeal of Stand Your Ground does not remove the need for the Castle Doctrine. It does not take away your Second Amendment rights that I firmly believe in. If someone comes in my home and tries to harm my family, you know, I want to be able to protect, you know, my family as well. But at the same time, I'm not going to, you know, run down the street trying to, you know, shoot them or bring harm to them. I'm going to call the police. And so, you know, one of the things that I think we ought to be doing is, you know, 95% of the legislature that's here now, the members, They weren't here in 2005, even though Representative Baxley, who filed the bill and passed the bill back then, is back. We need a debate. Just like the president said in his State of the Union address on gun control, it deserves a debate. It deserves a vote. And although stand your ground and gun control are not connected, stand your ground to repeal it deserves a vote. Let's have a conversation about it. What's the fear? What's wrong with having a debate openly where folks can share their thoughts and sentiments?
But Governor Scott did appoint a task force that came back and essentially said no change.
That task force was loaded. I mean, it was loaded with folks who were supportive of Stand Your Ground. There were no lawmakers on that task force that opposed Stand Your Ground. Although we had some great folks like my pastor, Reverend Holmes, who was on there, and Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll. There were no lawmakers on there who opposed Stand Your Ground. How can you have an honest debate, an honest task force with folks, at least from a lawmaker standpoint, that supported the bill?
I think I have not read this bill either, but I think Representative Baxley also has a bill to control neighborhood watches, because I think the Blue Ribbon Task Force saw that might have been a problem, actually was a problem. And so I think there's a bill out there. So we will have these debates and see what's agended in the committees and what isn't, and you know, go forward and continue to talk. But there was a Blue Ribbon panel, and you know, we'll keep looking at this issue, I guess, is what we'll do.
And we plan on standing our ground on this. We're going to have the debate. We had Trayvon Martin's mother come to the Capitol for a reason, to share with lawmakers the personal story. This isn't about gun control. This isn't about Second Amendment rights. It's not about taking people's guns away from them, right? It's about protecting our neighborhoods and keeping our children and our families safe when they're in our neighborhoods.
Well, if this is not likely to be changed anytime soon, something that does seem to have a better chance from what we've been hearing from some of the representatives and senators is Florida election law, which was significantly changed last year and now apparently is going to be significantly changed back to what it was. What's going on there, perhaps?
You know, I think we're looking at I think no one really liked those continuing committees of continuing existence. They were sort of shadow organizations that you never know where they were coming from and who was coming at you. And you know, everybody was very concerned about that. And I think there's some controls in the bill for that. Some of us don't think the bill goes far enough. Some of us also think the bill has too much money. Money is still the problem in the system. And I'm not sure we're really getting it that in a very meaningful way. I was talking to Lucy Morgan the other day when she was at Tiger Bay, talking about all the shenanigans that happened with the Republican Party and the use of funds. And, you know, I said, you know, and I related what had happened to the bill coming out and one of the speakers' initiatives, which is to do some real strong election reform and ethics reform. And she said, somehow we still have to get the money out of the system. And she was critical of what she's heard of the bill so far. It's not cooked yet. It's not completely done yet. But we're going to have to see what happens on the floor. But I just really think, for instance, the utility companies putting millions of dollars in to the Republican Party, a good bit of money to the Democratic Party, and then we don't even really haven't calculated yet how much money into each campaign account over the years. That is an indication where we have a regulated industry that's a regulated monopoly in the state of Florida that is using some of its expense account, its expense side money, to lobby very heavily the Florida legislature. And I think once you have that sort of influence, it's very difficult for people to open up their eyes, read bills carefully, open up their ears, listen carefully, and do the right thing. Do the things that need to be done for common sense solutions for Floridians. So I think this bill needs to go a little bit farther in my mind.
Okay. So upping the maximum individual contribution from $500 to $10,000 is perhaps not a good idea?
Well, let me back up and say this, Tom. I think there are two bills out there. what Representative Vasileno was talking about was campaign finance bill. The election law, what will be voted on, we have it ready. It's going to be ready to vote on the floor. I've seen it at both stops, both at the Elections and Ethics Committee and the Full Appropriations Committee, which I sit on. The elections bill, which is a counter to House Bill 1355, which Speaker Weatherford says agrees that we need to do something. The long lines, again, the president in the State of the Union address recognized Dessalene Victor, who's 102 years old, who stood in line for over 7 hours. We cannot have that happen. So what I did was I put forth an amendment into the bill that we're going to vote on the floor that now gives us a mandatory 64 hours of early voting, 8 hours a day for the first 8 days, and an optional 8 hours a day for the remaining 6 days of early voting. What's also in there is early optional Sunday, souls to the polls, Sunday voting the prior to Election Day. So it's going to be a bill that I think we can send to the Senate, and they're going to look at it. And then once we get that bill back, hopefully it'll be something that will turn back the clock on 1355 and hopefully give us a little bit more. What's also in there, and folks should know this, we were successful in getting into that bill by Representative Jim Boyd, expansion of early voting sites, which supervisors of elections like around the state, like Ion Sancho, all said will help us reduce the lines. And so we've expanded that. I think from the elections bill, we have a better bipartisan product. From the campaign finance reform side, like Michelle said, we have a long way to go.
Well, we'll get some input from the Senate, I think, in a moment. We're going to be joined by District 3 State Senator Bill Montford, who's on the telephone. And he'll be with us when Perspectives continues in just a moment. Well, we had the House local delegation here for the Capital Region on Perspectives today on WFSU-FM, and now we hear from the Senate. So let us bring in the Honorable State Senator from District 3, who is Bill Montford. Hey, Senator, how you doing?
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. How are y'all?
We are doing great.
The upper chamber is finally here.
Yeah, the upper chamber is down in the middle of the state working.
Very good. We appreciate that. Thank you.
I know y'all take good care of Tallahassee until I get back.
Indeed, yeah. We will.
We got you covered, boss.
So tell us, Senator, from your perspective there, what do you think is going to be, I mean, really the heavy-hitting stuff on your side of the Capitol as we kick off this 60-day circus next Tuesday?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, we'll certainly have an ethics bill that will come out quickly. I think that's certainly appropriate. That has been a priority of President Gates for quite some time, and so I think you'll see that you'll see some quick action on that, and there were some concerns that some of us had to start with. The original draft would have prohibited a government worker, for example, if you work at one of the prisons. I've got 9 prisons in my district, and if you were worked at one of the correction facilities and, say, serving on the school board, you would be prohibited from taking another government job, say it's a promotion or even to another state agency, you would be prohibited from doing that. Those of us who serve districts with high populations of government employees, like all of the counties I have and Representative Vasilena and Williams, both, we all have a lot of government employees, people who work for government, and if they serve in the capacity of a constitutional officer, then that would greatly reduce the number of people who could run for office, quite frankly, and that is a great concern. We don't have enough people running now, and so we were able to change that. We offered a couple of amendments in the Senate, and I think we got that changed. It may be needs to be tweaked a little bit more, but I think you'll certainly see that coming out.
So
citizens insurance is another issue for the banking and finance committee that you'll see come. Banking and insurance committee will come out, and that's one that's long overdue. Keep in mind that a lot of people do not realize that they are paying a subsidy, if you will, on your insurance policies now, not only your property and casualty insurance, but car insurance as well, for a storm that hit Florida 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We're paying that now. And the fact is we've got 1.3 million citizens' policies out there now. And if a hurricane hits, and it doesn't have to be a 4 or 5, it could be a 3, the projection is there will be billions of dollars worth of damage done. And if that happens, then everybody that's got an insurance policy of any kind will be subsidizing the damage, the repairing of the damage. So there are a lot of us, myself included, feel like that we've got to change somehow. We've got to change the current situation. The fact is, I've only have 2% of people in my district that have citizens insurance. So the question is, why should the 98% of the people in District 3 be subsidizing the insurance premiums for people in Miami and Jacksonville and Tampa? In other words, it sounds like a selfish thing, but it's not really. To me, it's just a fair issue. Why should one citizen have to pay for the insurance premiums of another one because they chose to build a home, perhaps even a second home, on the coast, a high prone area for hurricanes? Again, keep in mind there's 1.3 million citizens' policies, and there's projected it started out at 400,000, and there's still, as best we can tell, the experts, even if we wanted to continue the current situation, there still should be more than 400,000 or 500,000 policies. We got 1.3 million. What's interesting and what we found out is that of those 1.3 million citizen policies, 200,000 of those are not even residents of Florida. Let me say that again. 200,000 of the people that were helping pay their insurance premiums don't even live in Florida. As a matter of fact, of the 200,000, 30,000 of them live in a foreign country.
Maybe we should double tax them.
And so, you know, you wonder, well, I mean, how in the world did we get the situation we're in? But we're there, so we need to take some steps to clean it up and get it out of the way.
Now, Senator, before you joined us, we had a discussion here about some other issues relating to state employees, of which you have a significant number within District 3, and one of them being, possible changes to the FRS, the Florida Retirement System, possibly doing away with the defined benefit pension, moving into the 401k type option, and maybe also making some tweaks to a greater or lesser degree on health insurance coverage for state workers. How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think that's another terrible blow to our state workers. And keep in mind, we have the lowest per capita a number of state employees of any state in the country. So we have far, far fewer state employees than per capita than any other state.
And they're the lowest paid.
In our country.
And they're the lowest paid of all the 50 states.
What we realize is that we've got good, hardworking people. We've cut and cut to the point where we've got two or three people doing jobs we got a person doing job of two or three different people. And not only that, so they get low pay. Now they're paying 3% of the retirement, you can argue both sides of that, but the fact is they're making 3% less than they did a year ago. Fact is the cost of living has gone up. Fact is they haven't had a raise in 6 years. They're long overdue. So if you start tinkering around with the FRS system, again, that's not the thing to do. It's not wise from an economical standpoint.
Right.
I mean, if you force all new employees or deny them the opportunity to get into FRS, then it's real simple. You've got to have money coming in to sustain the good system. And so where will the money come from? It will have to be subsidized by tax dollars. And how much? They don't know. And that, to me, that's real, real shaky ground. Now, let me tell you something, too, that another small piece of that is if you hire someone in government and they're part of the Florida retirement system, I believe they're far less likely to leave and go into the private work because they're building up some retirement. With the proposal, they can just pick up and leave any day, and we know one of the hardest things we've had to do all along is to attract and retain the best and brightest people coming into government.
Yep.
This will just make it even more difficult. So I don't like it. I don't think that's the thing to do.
Folks,
in terms of insurance, the same thing. Our state employees have sacrificed enough. Enough.
Okay, let me go around the table here real quick in the moments that we have left. Again, kind of bouncing off of some political realities here, because we watched throughout past sessions here since, certainly in the case of our House members here, since 2008. And for you, Senator Montford, a couple years ago here when you came on deck, and we see you folks in the when it's a full floor meeting in the back of the chamber and you get up and you're making your point, you're arguing, and you can just see how the numbers are situated in both the House and the Senate chambers. And Democrats are still about what? The ratio is 3-1, outgunned by our friends in the Republican Party, and it makes it a little bit difficult to get your priorities going. How do you navigate in that kind of a reality, Representative Ray Winkle-Vasalinda?
All right. Well, for one thing, we did gain seats. And so, as I say, elections do matter. And the trend is going towards electing more Democrats and the people waking up and saying, we want less ideology, more common sense solutions. There is a more open air. And the other thing is I think if you don't engage in, you know, Republicans did this, Democrats did that, pointing fingers, but you come up with common sense solutions, the people, I think, respect that. And so, you know, for instance, I have a 7% raise for state employees. I was politifacted on, you know, some of the things I was saying about state employees. And in my bill, I have a number of whereas clauses. I hope all state employees will go out and take a look at it because it was meant to be a tribute to them, an ode to them as to why we should pay them well, why, you know, and what they do for our state and the quality of life to empower other citizens to live their lives as best they can and make the best lives for themselves. And so I think what we need to do is to work with common sense solutions. When I speak to my colleagues, when I talk to the speaker about, for instance, the FRS, saying, you know, speaker, this is going to have a trust in government issue because what you're going to do with the defined defined benefit people, you're going to make their numbers smaller and smaller, but the bigger bill as it goes out, you know, you're a young guy, you know, 10 years from now, this may come back to, you know, haunt you a little bit. And so you need to, you know, we need to be thinking about this. I've also talked to people who lobby, for instance, for the villages, saying, I mean, and I know that's a very conservative stronghold, but who's going to be around to buy into the villages? Most of those people in the villages, I bet, are defined contribution pensioners who now are speaking against defined contribution. I think that we need to bring these things up, bring up the effect on the overall economy, bring it to the governor's attention that this will affect jobs and his promise of 700,000 jobs in 7 years. You know, he's going to have to tally that up when he runs again. This is, you know, when you affect people's ability to spend their money because either they're not getting what they ought to in retirement or they're starting to contract their own economy, their own personal household economies, and they're not spending out there in the community because they're very concerned about their retirement or because they haven't gotten a raise in 6 years, that really has an effect on the overall economy. When you talk to the bankers, conservative, hard-nosed business folks, and say, wasn't it state employees and government employees that you guys used to, you know, sort of rely on for some of your home loans because they were a good in pay, they were good payers, and you knew that they were going to pay their mortgages. And they say, yeah, that's right. I mean, so you bring these ideas to people, and there's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come, or, you know, where it's really, truly common sense and hits people in their heart and opens up their minds. So that's, I think, how some of us work. And I think, you know, elections do matter. The people do have a voice. And the press, frankly, is all in this. So it's not just what's going on in the little house, you know, nooks in the halls around the House floor. It's what the press is bringing to the people and what the pressure the people put on us and other elected officials. So I think the system's working slowly, painfully sometimes. But I think we'll work the system as people who have gone before us have worked it.
Okay, Representative Williams, your Democratic House Whip, your take on all this.
Well, I would tell you, you know, being involved at the leadership level within the Democratic caucus gives you a different perspective of how relationships are fostered. You know, over the past 4 years, you know, we've been in a very contentious frame of mind with past speakers or and even past leaders on the Republican side. But now I will tell you that, you know, I give credit where credit is due. Will Weatherford has extended the branch of bipartisanship to members of the Democratic caucus. We will show that on the first day of session when we put forth a bill that – elections bill that – may not get us all the way where we want to go, but it would definitely cure a lot of the ailments that we had in this past year's election. And a lot of that is due, large part of it is due to working together, sitting down at the table together with Representative Janet Cruz, who's our ranking member on Elections Committee, and Jim Boyd, Speaker Weatherford, and Perry Thurston, our Democratic leader, myself, and Jim Boyd and others on our committee. But I would tell you, going a lot further, you know, and I'm glad that Senator Mumford's on the line, you know, the collegiality that you have in the Senate a lot of times is a lot better than we have in the House on certain issues. And so we're trying to, you know, hopefully leverage that. I think folks are tired, and like we started out the show, or start off the show, people are tired of what they're seeing in Washington, D.C. We're starting to see it permeate even at the local level around the state of Florida. So if we can try and stop it and leave it in Washington, leave it in the Beltway, and not have it come to Tallahassee, I think everyone wins in that regard.
Okay. Senator Mumford, you have a new leader also in the Senate, Don Gates of Niceville. This is his first of two sessions. He'll be president of the Senate. How do you see that working out?
I couldn't be more pleased with Senator Gates or President Gates' approach to his leadership team and his leadership for these 2 years. Senator Gates, I go way back. He was a school superintendent when I was several years ago. So he and I are not due to each other, but he has clearly embraced the bipartisanship theory, if you will. Some of us, I chair a committee, I'm vice chair of two appropriation committee, I'm on the rules committee, I'm on gaming committee, and I'm not unusual. All the Democrats in the Senate are having an opportunity to participate fully. And now, our views still may differ, but at the same time, our views are heard, and they're heard clearly. Senator Gates encourages differences of opinion. He encourages debate. He encourages all of us, Democrats and Republicans, to speak our piece and make a good, sound decision. So, you know, I've never been in the House, but in the Senate, I feel comfortable that we're doing business the best way possible. We'll have some differences of opinion, but interestingly, in the Senate, sometimes you'll see Democrats and Republicans agreeing on issues. That happens more often than not. And so it's a good example, I think, of a good two-party system that's working.
Okay. Thanks, folks. Let's see if we can squeeze in just one last call, if we can keep it short here. Hey, Mike, welcome to Perspectives.
I just want to give a shout-out to one of my lifetime heroes, and one of the brightest stars of public radio in Florida, Tom Flanagan, and also to his helper there, Taylor Cox, and a special hello to RJ from Dottie, and tell you folks that we're still listening down here in Miami.
Well, Mike, we miss you up here in Tallahassee. Mike was behind the glass doing yeoman's work for us for many years for absolutely no pay whatsoever.
Another state employee.
And another hard work in their former state employee. So, folks, gosh, we could talk for another hour. And, Senator, we really appreciate your calling in to us. And good luck on the upcoming session. Representative Ray Winkle-Vasalinda and Representative Williams, thank you also for coming
thank
on Perspectives
you. We
today.
Thank you. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance from the aforementioned Taylor Cox, Stephen Rodriguez, handling phone calls, emails, and tweets today. And Lydell Rawls back there providing major auxiliary backup to the whole proceeding. Next week on Perspectives, some folks affiliated with some of the city's various ethnic festivals will be with us. Might even talk about food. Bring a big appetite. Join us then for Perspectives right here.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.